Welcome to the All About Alts podcast, where we explore the world of alternative investing to help you find financial independence. Join our host, Newview Trust's president, Jason DeBono, as he covers a variety of topics with different guest speakers to discuss tax and alternative investing strategies. It is never too late to start taking control of your financial future, and we are so excited for you to be joining us for this opportunity to hear from some of the best in the business.
Welcome back, everybody, to the All About Alts podcast. I am your host, Jason DeBono. Excited to be here today. Today, we have a guest-free show. Some of our feedback from a lot of our listeners is, hey, what about this specific item or that specific area? And so this season, we're really trying to sprinkle in a few more individual podcasts to just highlight some of these things that I think are pretty cool from a finance standpoint. That really are not necessarily something to bring a guest speaker in. And so today we're going to talk about what we call special purpose plans. And these are ways for you to save additional money above and beyond what you're doing for retirement. Most people don't know these plans exist. If they do, they probably don't know how well they work. And if they do know how well they work, they're probably not utilizing them to the full capabilities. And so the goal today is just to be thinking about, hey, are there other buckets of money that I could be putting some of my savings into, and can I do that in a tax advantage manner, right? And that's ultimately what we're about. What's really cool about the special purpose plans is they can be fully self-directed, meaning you can buy alternative assets like real estate, private notes, private equity, all within the plan. So you're not giving anything up. You're just finding another way to save in another vehicle. And these are special purpose. So they're for unique purposes, right? And so these are not necessarily designed for retirement. They're designed ultimately for saving for health expenses and saving for minors' educational expenses. And so we'll kind of walk through and talk through those. So we're going to start with plan number one today. It's the health savings account. Now, this is an interesting one. And I've known about these plans for a long time. I won't go back and quote any inception date because I just don't know. But they've been around a long time, 10 plus years and more. Health savings accounts are really cool because they tie to high deductible health insurance. And this is kind of another side of the world. And I'll start by saying I'm not an insurance agent. I don't have an insurance license, nor am I pushing anyone into any insurance product. But I do want to talk about the HSA and high deductible health insurance because, you know, we obviously have an issue with insurance here. I think everybody knows it. It's a major problem. It's a little embarrassing. To be such a civilization and world power, yet we haven't quite figured out how to manage insurance, whether that's cars or houses, or how to manage insurance for health. And it seems like there's just too many challenges that come with that. And while we can complain about it, there's still a system that we got to operate and live within. And so until it's fixed, we at least need to make the best choices with the information and options that we have available today. Most people are familiar with copay insurance. That's kind of the creme de la creme of insurance in the eyes of the beholder, which is I want to be able to have my employer subsidize my insurance costs. I want to have a plan that allows me to go to the doctor whenever I need or want, and I want to have that small copay, right? $20 because I got the sniffles and I went to my primary care to find out if I was actually sick. Those plans are great. The problem with those plans is the cost of those is getting so high that many employees are either abandoning them or the cost that they're passing on to the individuals is getting higher and higher. And so what we're seeing is a large influx of high deductible insurance plans making their way into individual employees, as well as those that are self-employed or not employed into their insurance stack. So the way that high deductible health insurance works a little different than a copay. So in a copay program, right, there's predetermined rates and guidelines as to how much you're responsible to pay for whatever the activity is. In a high deductible health insurance plan, you are out of pocket 100% for all the small stuff, and you're really insuring the big stuff. And the best way that I can analogize this that kind of makes sense is think about your car insurance. So depending on what you drive, right, I would imagine that most of us are driving around with an insurance deductible on our vehicle that has a $500 minimum. What that means is that the deductible for me to pay in the event that I do something where I need repairs is $500. And the logic of that is that if I have a higher deductible, I have a lower premium. So naturally, I may pay $100 a month for a $500 deductible. But if I only want to have a $100 deductible, I may pay $150. Well, the math that we're doing in our head is, well, why would I pay $50 more a month to save $400 on my deductible? I'm not going to hit anything. I'm not going to have an expense. So I might as well keep that premium lower, i.e. $100 a month. And in the event that something happens, I'll pay the extra money. And if you do the math, right, at $50 more per month, or in this case, $50 less per month to be on the high deductible plan, which is $500, it's really an 8-month break even. So if you do the math on this, I have a deductible that costs me $400 more, but I'm saving $50 per month. So my break even is 8 months. So the mental kind of calculation is, I'm not going to get into an accident every 8 months. So I'm better off paying more as a deductible and paying less as an actual monthly payment. And then if I go 10 months, 12 months, 20 months without an accident, every month, I'm actually making $50 past that 8th month. And we do that math so simply in our head, and it's super easy. And again, it's why everybody has $500 deductibles or higher, because we know how to kind of make that math make sense. When it comes to health insurance, though, for whatever reason, we don't want to do any math. We just want to go to the doctor. We want to pay our $20 copay and move on. But what we fail to realize is that for a lot of people, and again, using kind of painting everybody with a broad brushstroke, and I understand health scenarios cause people to, you know, choose different insurance. So please make sure that you're thinking this through for your own individual insurance needs. But if I look at health insurance, if I go get a copay insurance plan, I am going to pay more, right, than I would if I got a high deductible health insurance plan, because I'm out of pocket more, right? Therefore, it's cheaper. When I'm out of pocket less, I pay more in premium. But what we don't tend to do is actually compare the math like we did in that auto example. And so what you end up with is people selecting this copay program, but they're actually leaving a lot of money on the table. And I think this is something that I would encourage everybody out there is to just price it, quote it, and see what makes sense. So to give an example, typically high deductible health insurance is a minimum of a $1,250 deductible. That means that you are out of pocket for $1,250 of your medical expenses annually, 100% till insurance kicks in. So you're basically buying catastrophic insurance. You're not paying for the doctor visit. You're paying if you broke your arm and had to have surgery. That's what we're insuring. But if you look at the cost, and I'm kind of making these numbers up, but I've seen scenarios just like this. If you took a health insurance program that was copay, and maybe the cost is $100 a month. And if you look at a high deductible, maybe the cost is $50 a month. So there's a $50 savings every month for you. And sometimes I've seen the numbers as $200, $300, $400, $500 cheaper. And you compare that to, how often do I use the insurance? What's my out-of-pocket and how much do I save? If you do the math over 12 months, you're going to save about $600. So the question becomes, will you spend $600 in medical expenses? Now, if you have something catastrophic, of course, because you're going to pay the full deductible, right? $1,200, $1,500, $2,000. But for most people, catastrophic stuff happens once every 10 years, right? Not once every year. So the question is that $600 actually a savings to you? Well, if I look at 2023, for me, I spent a whopping $0 at the doctor. I was fortunate. I was not sick. And if I was, I wasn't sick enough to warrant a doctor visit. A couple of the preventative maintenance trips that I had were covered, right? Because high deductible health insurance still does care for preventative maintenance. I had no expenses. So by picking the high deductible health plan, I have $600 of savings on my insurance premiums that's mine. That money doesn't go away. Now, next year, I start with a $600 jump start on my expenses. The other thing that helps make that decision really easy for some people is that not only can I save $600, I can put it into a health savings account and get a tax deduction for my contribution. So that means I get a little bit back on my taxes, right? Maybe that's 20-25%. And I'm able to keep that money inside that HSA and invest it into whatever I see fit for it to grow tax-free. And as long as I take it out for qualifying medical expenses anytime in the future, it's 100% tax-free. So I can take my $600, right? And I can add it. And then next year I can grow it to 800 or 1,000, and I can keep doing that while still contributing every year. So my recommendation is, if you do have a high deductible health plan, at a minimum, you should be putting the difference in savings on premium into your HSA. So in my case, I can take the $50 savings on my high deductible health premium every single month and tuck that into my health savings account, again, with a tax deferral, and with tax-free growth for qualifying medical expenses. So the HSA is really what we're here to talk about, but an HSA only exists if you have high deductible health insurance. So what are we seeing trends in the market? Well, a lot of things are going on. Number one, we're seeing a lot of employer plans offer an option. So we do here at NewView. If you are covered in the, into our NewView health program, you actually have the choice. Do you want to have a copay product or do you want to have a HSA product? Now, we as an employer pay a certain percentage of any plan that you select, but it's the same percentage, which means chances are you're out of pocket or higher for a copay. And so when you do the math and you start looking at the numbers, a lot of people are looking at the high deductible health program because it has an HSA option. In addition to that, we also make a contribution into our team members' HSA accounts. And we're seeing a lot of employers do that because we want to incentivize people to choose the HSA option with high deductible because we believe it's a good strategy to save, right? If your healthcare needs warrant it, but we also know that it's less expensive to the company. And so we want to share that savings back. And we're seeing that with many employers now that are not only offering a choice, right? Choose high deductible or choose copay or something in between. They're also encouraging and incentivizing the health savings side of it by putting money, which is the savings and premium, into the actual employee's HSA accounts. So I can't encourage you guys enough to take a look at that. I talk to people all the time that didn't even realize that they had that option. So if you think about this example, not only do I get a savings in my own insurance, and again, let's call that $50, my employer may put $50 in, which means I'm actually saving $100 a month. So over the course of a year is $1,200. If I've got a $1,500 deductible, I'm literally 1 year away from having my deductible paid. And if I go a couple of years without hitting my deductible, meaning nothing catastrophic, which is pretty common, I may end up with $4,000 or $5,000 or $6,000 saved. Now I'm way ahead of the game. Now I can be on high deductible health insurance and know that if something catastrophic happened 1 or 2 years in a row, I'd have enough money in my HSA to pay for it. But if I continue, right, to stay in good health and use good preventative care and not have anything catastrophic, I may go 10 years without hitting my deductible. So not only do I have all the money that I've saved every year, because that continues to grow and accumulate, I don't lose it, it's my money. I also am able to invest that money and now have the earnings associated with those savings. So, you know, it's a very big piece of building wealth, in my opinion. I don't necessarily think everybody needs to have high deductible and be on an HSA simply because healthcare needs for individuals may warrant more of a copay type program. But for a lot of people, there is an opportunity that's being missed every single day because they're not even reading the packet that they're getting from their employer around what types of insurance are available. And they're not even looking at the component. If they do select the cheapest insurance, they're not using that savings to go contribute it to their HSA and actually build that nest egg. So to me, it's a very powerful combination and a very powerful tool. And I would encourage each of you guys to take a really hard look at what you have from a program or plan standpoint. Last thing on the HSA from a contribution standpoint that's really cool is you can even put more money in. The contribution limit to an HSA is $4,150 for 2024. It's $8,300 for a family plan. So if I have a plan where I'm saving $600 on my insurance and my employer's giving me $600 a year, right, $50 to be on an HSA, that's $1,200. I have the ability to add more of my own money to that $1,200 till I hit the $4,150 contribution limit. So that's something to also be looking at. Other big tool is that an HSA is the only plan that is tax deductible for a contribution and tax-free for a distribution, the best of both worlds. Remember, in any tax-advantaged account, it's either taxed on the way in or taxed on the way out, right? Pick your poison. In an HSA, it's deductible on the way in and tax-free, which means you actually never have to pay tax on those dollars because the government is incentivizing you to contribute to your HSA. So take full advantage of that. You can have an HSA all the way up until typically 65 or when you start enrolling into any part of Medicaid. It doesn't mean that you can not keep the plan. It means that you can no longer contribute to it. After 65, you can withdraw for non-medical expenses. You just have to pay tax on your withdrawal because it doesn't meet the criteria of being a medical expense and being tax-free. Or you can withdraw it for medical expenses 100% tax-free. And you'd be amazed at what constitutes as a medical expense under the provisions that are provided. So I would encourage you to take a look at that. Worst case scenario, you have too much money in your HSA, which would be a great problem to have. Best case scenario, you've got a nice little nest egg that's tax-free for withdrawals to help pay for these medical expenses. Our medical expenses don't usually go down as we age. They tend to go up. And so the more we can save during our healthy years will ultimately help us, hopefully, as we start to have some of those requirements where we spend a little bit more time at the doctor as we get a little bit older. So that is the HSA. There's a whole lot more to it, but I wanted to just kind of give that. I know we've gotten a lot of questions and fielded a lot of comments about the HSA. As a tool, and especially as we look at it with an accompaniment to high deductible health insurance plans. So talk to your insurance provider, talk to your HR department or your benefits counselors. But if you're not using a high deductible health program and you consider yourself someone that doesn't typically go to the doctor or have a lot of need, then I would encourage you to go take a look and see. You may be amazed what not only is offered or available through your employer, but you may be amazed that they'll even match or kickstart your HSA contributions as well. So don't just grab the high deductible health insurance plan because it's cheaper. Get it because you believe that it's less expensive and the money that you save when contributed to an HSA will provide you enough money to cover those qualifying medical expenses and allow you to slowly build up a nest egg for future expenses as you get older. The next plan I want to talk about that we get a lot of questions on is, how do I save for my kids' education? And, you know, this is something I've got two kids and my wife and I have kind of gone, you know, through the process to figure out what does make the most sense. What is the best way to save and how does that look? And every family and household is completely different. But really what I kind of looked at is I boiled it down really to three kind of logical ways to save. The first one is to do a college prepay program. College prepay here in the state of Florida allows you to go buy credits. You can buy 2-year, 4-year university credits, and you buy them at an expected future rate. Now, the thing I like about a college prepay is once you've made the investment, whether it's lump sum or you pay over time, you are basically buying all the credits needed for that child to get a 2-year or 4-year degree at that institution. The problem that I have with the college prepay program is that you're buying them at a already inflated rate. Historically, the value of buying college prepay credits was that you paid today's rates. So if my son was just born, I'm paying today's rates and I'm buying his credit hours, but he gets to spend them 18 years later. And so ultimately, my investment is the fact that I bought them today at today's price, not tomorrow. The problem with the way that these college prepaid programs seem to be working today is that they've recognized that prices of college have gone up. And so they're putting some arbitrary rise on those. So I'm actually buying tomorrow's credits today at tomorrow's prices. Maybe it's not all of tomorrow's prices, but it's pretty hard to look at a credit hour and see it inflated from today and not know what that's going to look like. So that's kind of the con to it, right? The pro obviously is that if you buy enough credit hours, you know that they have enough hours to get through school when they're there at a future date. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's a little more conservative approach. It's a little more set it and forget it. Maybe it works out to be good. Maybe it works out to be not as good. But ultimately, I'm not paying more for the credits than they're worth, right? And so from that standpoint, that's an opportunity. The second way is to utilize some sort of 529 state-sponsored program. These are pretty cool plans because they allow you to put money in. They're state-sponsored. My understanding of most of them is they're brokerage-based. And so they're buying and selling public equities inside these accounts. And they're generating return over the next 18 years. What's nice about 529s is that really anybody can contribute, any family member, and there's no limit, at least not here in the state of Florida. So you can put $5,000 in this year and none next year and $10,000 in and then none. So you have the ability to move money in and out as it makes sense. But again, that money it has a little more constrained use to it. That money is managed by the state or fund manager that kind of oversees that. So you've got no investment control. And you don't really get any major tax advantage to do it, right? Doesn't make it a bad plan. It's kind of a little bit better than saving, in just a checking account. But it has some things that don't line up as well, in my opinion, that are not as opportunistic, which leads me really to the third way to save for you know, your kids or grandkids' education, and that is a Coverdell ESA. So ESA stands for Educational Savings Account. It is a special purpose account, kind of like an IRA in theory, but it's not for retirement. It's for educational expenses. So much like the HSA, right, which is for health expenses, the ESA is for educational expenses. So if money is used in an ESA to pay for qualifying educational expenses, it's a tax-free withdrawal, which is super cool. Think of this like a Roth IRA to pay for your kids' education. You don't get a tax deduction to make the contributions, right? Kind of like a Roth. However, when you pull money out to pay for their educational expenses, it's 100% tax-free. Now, the limit on a Coverdell is $2,000, and it can come from family members as well. It just cannot exceed $2,000 for that individual for the year. So if I have an ESA for my kids and grandma and grandpa decide to put $500 into each of their accounts, then the limit for the rest of the year for any other contributors is $1,500 because the total amount of contributions for any one child cannot exceed $2,000 in a year. So there's definitely some strategy there, but it's a great way. So when our kids get Christmas money or birthday money or, you know, money for any other event, you know, we take that and we go put it right into their ESA accounts. And so it's nice because it reduces the amount that we need to contribute if our goal is to get a full $2,000 in annually, and it increases the amount of money that's being saved. The thing that I love about the ESA, and it's by far my favorite part, is that it works like a Roth, right? That's exciting, but it can be fully self-directed. That means that I can take that ESA account for, in this case, my son and my daughter, and I can go buy real estate. I can issue private loans. I can do whatever it is, as long as it's arm's length, that I want to grow that account. So not only can I get $2,000 a year into their accounts, now, there's no tax deduction to put it in, but that money comes out 100% tax-free. Again, think of it like the Roth IRA of educational accounts. And I can take that money and go invest it into anything that I see fit. And then once they reach 18, if they're just simply taking that directly to college, whatever's in there plus what it continues to grow is all theirs. The beauty of an ESA as well is that if you want to use it for expenses prior to college, you can. So there are a lot of things that an ESA covers tax-free. And so it's not just college credits. It's college credits. It's private high school. It's books, materials, supplies, anything that really can constitute as a requirement for your child's educational journey. So, you know, we've seen people with Coverdells use it to put their children in private high school because they're maybe athletic in a certain area and they want to go get the best training and try to get a scholarship. And so being able to spend that money in high school for private education and private training where maybe they couldn't afford to do it otherwise is a huge opportunity. A couple other things on the ESA account. If you have an ESA account and your child, grandchild, whomever it is, does not use the money, it has to be distributed at age 30. Now, at age 30, that means that if, let's just say, my son forgoes any education that qualifies and he's got 20 grand in his account, when he gets to 30, that money has to come out and he's got to pay tax on it. And the reason he's got to pay tax on it is because it works just like a Roth, which is if you use it for qualifying expenses, it's tax-free. But if you just try to take it out outside of that educational expense requirement, they're going to ensure that tax gets paid on it. So certainly there's a lot of incentive for that child to actually go and utilize it in some form of education. And that's why the rules are so liberal on it in terms of what qualifies as a qualifying educational expense. The other thing that's really cool is that an ESA can be handed down to another sibling. So in this case, you know, my son is the oldest. If he takes that money to college and maybe he gets a scholarship, or some other form of expense, or maybe he goes to a vocational school, which can be a great way, or he wants to be an apprentice. And so maybe the $50,000 that he's accumulated over the years in growth, he only spends 20. That $30,000 can be passed down to his younger sister, stay tax-free, as long as she uses it for qualifying educational expenses. So it's kind of interesting to strategize as a parent because you want to put maximum amounts in both accounts, but in the event that we can only contribute to one, we would likely contribute to the older child's because the hope would be that it doesn't all get spent and we can pass that down to the younger child. It also elongates the amount of growth that we get in a tax-free manner, right? And if you kind of think about the very basics of how you generate return,
right? It is interest rate, right? Rate of return multiplied by time. Well, the more time that you create by not just having it from my son all the way up to 30, but you get to pass it down and also get another handful of years on the younger sibling as well. Great, great strategy and a lot of opportunities there. So as we talk, you know, when we talk about these special purpose plans and you listen to other podcasts that we do throughout season two, hopefully you're starting to build this picture that there's really some components to be thinking about, right? Which is A, how do I just save as much money as possible? B, what are the buckets that I put that money into, right? Traditional Roth, simple SEP, 401k, now in this case, HSA and ESA where it makes sense. And then C becomes, what do I do with the money, right? How do I invest it? How do I make the money that I put in multiply over the years from the $2,000 ESA contribution to the return that $2,000 can generate me if I invest into X, Y, or Z. So part of money management and part of building wealth is all about, you know, thinking about all of these scenarios. But what I can tell you is that every scenario that has tax advantage associated with it is absolutely the right choice to get to wealth. It's what the wealthy do. It's what the high net worth earners do. They not only find good ways to save, they not only find good ways to invest, but they find good ways to ensure they keep the most amount of money possible by putting them into tax sheltered or tax advantage vehicles. And that's really what an HSA and a covered LR or an ESA, they're special purpose tax advantage vehicles. And they can be used in combination, in conjunction with accounts that you already have in other areas that you're already saving. There's a whole lot more to them. Take a look on the newviewtrust.com website. We've got a lot more tutorials and white papers and educational content. If you aren't 100% sure if an HSA is right for you, pick up the phone and call us. If you've got grandkids, kids, nieces, nephews, and you're looking for a more productive way to gift them something, an ESA can be a great way because it allows you to give them money, but it allows you to give it to them with a little bit of a time constraint on it where they can't just go use it for anything. And they'll thank you in 10 or 12 or 15 years when they do work on kind of growing their education beyond, you know, what they get through the school system and actually going out and having the money to make some good, wise decisions there. So hopefully we learned a little bit today. Hopefully we generated some questions to go ask our spouse, our kids, our friends, our family members, but most importantly, on the HSA side, make sure you're talking to your healthcare provider, your benefits provider, if that's through your work, if you're using an independent provider outside of work, maybe you're self-employed. Have these types of questions about should you be in high deductible insurance? How much cheaper is it? What is the cost? What is the savings? And does it line up nicely for you to become a contributor to an HSA with all the money that you're saving per month on the expenses typically associated with a copay or low deductible insurance plan? Thank you guys very much for being here today. We appreciate you being loyal listeners to the show. Hit the like, share, subscribe button, throw us a 5-star review. We'd appreciate it. But we continue to drive forward the idea of tax-advantaged investing, making the most out of what you do with your money, and also finding the most advantageous alternative investment strategy that makes sense for you and your family. So happy investing, and we'll see you guys next week.
Thank you so much for listening. We hope the information within this podcast has given you the tools that you need to find your way to financial independence. We would love to partner with you on this journey. Text ALTS, that's ALTS, to 407-708-1853 to learn more about how to get started today. Don't forget to follow us to make sure you don't miss a second of content, and we'll see you next week.